I'm always trying to learn. So every time that anything happens, I'm always asking, what did I learn from this? Every time I listen to something, it's like, what do I learn from this? And then I ask him, how can I apply this, to my life? How does this apply to my life?
To the Passion Behind the Art show. It's all about diving in with individuals to learn the story behind their passion. It's your host, Daryl Pinnock. What's up? Thank you for stopping by. You're in for a treat. Remember to check out my newest project, flyteddy.com. Flyteddy.com. Now, time for this week's episode. Well, I'm super excited to have Alejo. I told you I'm going to destroy it on the Passion Behind the Heart show, aka Alejandro. See, I told you it was easier for me. Oh, man. Super excited to have you on the podcast. Amazing with the sketch notes. And he's also a coach for creatives. Welcome, brother.
Thank you so much, Daryl. It's a pleasure. I'm glad that we were able to connect. And yeah, just looking forward to just chat with you and get to share something that's valuable for the people that are listening.
Sweet. So that was your second time at Creative South or your first?
That was my first time. Yeah. I've heard about it like years ago and every year I kind of missed it. Like I realized it happened after the fact. I was like, and last year, a good friend of mine attended and I was looking at Instagram. I was like, oh no, I couldn't attend this time. But next year we're on it. And I like said it done. Like I was just like patiently waiting for the thing to just, pop up on Instagram. This guy's already promoting this thing. So, as soon as I could, I think it was December, I bought my ticket and I was like already messaging him, hey, do you already buy your ticket? I already booked my Airbnb. Like, let's go, let's go. So, all right. Yeah, it was
so fun. First of all, Alejo.
Yeah.
Alejo. Promise you, I got it now.
Yes,
Alejo.
You got it.
Is an amazing artist, all right? And thank you. I don't care if... we were talking about Ink Wars. I don't know if it wasn't because it wasn't on the theme or whatever the case may be. Like, it was you and Jason Craig, bro. Like, your drawing, the time it took for you to get that bad boy done, like, it was insane. Are you used to drawing to that scale?
Yeah, actually, I am. Because the sketch note thing that I do... Like that, what we call sketch notes is just basically drawings with notes that we take in small scale, like in a sketchbook or stuff like that. But I got started with that and trained as what it's called a graphic recording, which is like 40 by 60 board sometimes.
I forgot about that.
So I love big scale. And when I do those things, I have a marker and go. I have no time to do pre-sketches or anything like that. So it's exhilarating. I love it. And I guess it kind of showed. And I appreciate that you say that. I think the rest of the people did a great job. I was super excited about, just being surrounded by all their very talented people because that energizes me, And I think I got definitely, that was one of the things that actually like propelled me to do that. I was being surrounded by other people who are doing amazing things keeps me on my toes, And yeah, so I enjoy it. It was so, so much fun.
So do you know Emily?
Emily.
I think it's, is it Mills now? I think her last
name
changed.
Yeah, totally. Okay.
Because she was like the person that I knew about. Like, to me, she was the person that kind of put sketch notes in my, like, view. She's amazing.
Yeah. I think it's what it was from her or from Mike Rohde that I knew about Creative South.
Okay.
Originally. Yeah, because
she's been to Creative South a few times. Yeah.
It came like on my radar at some point. I was like, oh, that's cool. There's a conference in Georgia that I could attend. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just life happened. And anyway, the timing is, you know, the timing is when the timing is supposed to be. And I was there at the time that I was supposed to be, and I think I enjoy it. So I cannot regret not being before, even though I would have liked to. But,
right,
you know, the experience was totally worth the wait, I feel.
That's a great attitude. All right, so let's jump right into it. How did your creative journey start?
Ooh, professionally, I can go with when I was a kid, I used to draw. But I feel like professionally, since I'm talking with probably a bunch of designers, people who are doing this and trying to make a living with it, it started kind of bumpy because I was scared of becoming a starving artist. I come from Costa Rica, which is a small country in Central America. And I come from a family that has a lot of artists in them, and they're awesome. But I also saw how hard it was for them because the market is so small. And I was just, you know, I chickened out. So when I was about to start college, I actually... my first career was biology because I'm a curious person. I had a very good teacher too that got me pumped. So I wanted to become a biologist, and then after failing calculus and chemistry twice and all that, I was like, okay, I think this is not the way.
That will do it.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, it's okay to fail, but if you're like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to enjoy this. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm going against my nature. So at that point, my mom, through some friend, found out about somebody who did like career advising. And this person showed me all the pamphlets of all the careers of all the universities in Costa Rica and told me, go and check out the ones that you're more excited about. And I ended up choosing from all of those hundreds of things, graphic design, because it was the closest that I could get to art without being artsy, you know, like everybody needs a logo or like design, stuff like that. So it was more commercial, and I was like, okay, I have good chances in this. So I studied graphic design in my undergrad, and then I graduated, and then I worked in graphic design, and I didn't really liked it that much. Like it didn't click. Like I understood stuff, but it wasn't like clicking to me, because what I've always loved is to draw. And I didn't even know there was a career as illustration. Like in Costa Rica, there was not a career of illustration. Most people who wanted to do something with drawing would go to animation, and I wasn't so keen about that. And eventually I was just thinking about like, what should I do with my life? You know, like, I don't know. I want to keep growing. I want to do something more than graphic design, but I don't know which direction I want to go. And at that point, it was one of those kind of like, you know, like looking back is okay, stars align, things happen at the right time. And my mom, she's an accountant, and she has a lot of books, and she had left a book on the table one day just randomly that got my attention. It was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I started reading it, and I found out about this thing called investing. And I was like, oh, so you can do something else with money besides spending it and saving it. So I was curious about it. And as part of an exercise, I think it's part of the book, I made a list of all the people that I knew or that my parents knew that I knew were successful, like in business in general, so that I could interview them. And the first person that I interviewed took me seriously. Like, he didn't have to, like, because I was just like, so what's investing? That was my question. Like, how do I do this? And he started, okay, let's talk about, you know, you as a professional. And then he taught me about the best investment. And the first investment you should do is in yourself, because you're the one who is producing the money first. So he coached me for you know, a few years. I think it was like 2 years. And through that relationship, we met every week, other week. We talked about my career. What did I want to do? What did I want to accomplish? If I wanted to get married at some point, like, did I want to get married empty-handed, or did I want to bring to the table some economic, you know, like something, you know, already, like not just come empty-handed, right, just with my love, you know? So he really like helped me a lot. And in that process, I started researching about doing a master's degree somewhere outside Costa Rica, because I knew I needed to get out of the country to learn new perspectives and stuff like that. So long story short, I was afraid of becoming an artist. I took the long route, decided to go tangentially to the route of art, ended up getting a coach that changed completely my approach to life and, you know, to business, to money, to relationships. And after that, I applied for a master's degree that I came to the United States to do. And there I met my wife. So I stayed, like I ended up staying here and just working as an illustrator and eventually as a graphic recorder. And now just like doing all those stuff, like getting paid to draw basically, which is fantastic. And now I'm doing this thing of coaching, because coaching changed my life. So I was fortunate enough that I found somebody who took me seriously and who helped me out, who was patient with me. And I've seen so many people along my way, you know, in college stuff, just kind of like drop like flies because they were burnt out, because they didn't have that mentorship, that coaching. And so that's what inspired me to start doing this for other people.
Awesome.
So that's kind of like in a big nutshell, in a coconut, you know, my creative journey.
Okay. That's interesting. I just want to let you know, like, so I wasn't born in the U.S. either. I was actually born.
Where are you born?
I was actually born in Jamaica.
Oh, cool.
So I do kind of understand, like, the perspective of, like, needing to leave the country for this, especially if it was more than 10 years ago. For me, it was this opportunity. It's not so much now, because I feel like the internet has kind of evened the playing field a little bit. But definitely in certain avenues, legitimacy, I do feel like the state still provides that for certain avenues. But I do believe the internet kind of leveled the playing field.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's also like a matter, and I was actually talking with somebody today about this, like a matter of like personality. I am a very social person and I thrive like feeding up from the energy of people around me. So I knew I had to be in a place where there were creative people pushing their boundaries really hard. Because otherwise, if I'm just me, my computer alone somewhere else, I don't feel that vibe. And it's just harder for me. And it's kind of like a self-awareness sort of thing. Because I knew that, then I also knew that I had to get out of Costa Rica and I had to get into an environment that was completely different from where I was so that I could get the best of that.
Cool. So what's some of the ways you generate revenue right now?
Yeah, well, basically those two things. I get paid to draw, illustration, doing graphic recording. Graphic recording is like my bread and butter. I work with this company, The Sketch Effect. And, you know, like I'm busy, like tomorrow I'm hopping on a plane to go to an event in Miami. Last week I was in Texas and so on and so forth. So that is like the biggest thing that I do. And then just illustration stuff from time to time. My wife and I, we have a creative studio. I met her in art school. She's an illustrator too. So sometimes we work together on some projects. Sometimes she's like working on some projects herself. But it's kind of like part of the same business. And so, yeah, essentially the first one is just I get paid to draw. And the other one is people pay me to coach them, essentially, just to have somebody who keeps them accountable, gives them new perspective. Those are the ones that I have so far. I know I kind of started this talking about like investing and all that stuff. It has taken me a minute to kind of get there. Eventually, I would love to have not only I would love, like I'm planning and I'm like researching and learning more about, like, you know, buying businesses and stuff like that, so I can have other sources of revenue that are not my time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's also something that I feel like kind of lands down once you have a family and a kid. It's like, okay, you cannot be trading your time for money your whole life. Like, that's not going to work. So yeah, but so far, like right now, doing pretty well and very excited that I still have energy and like the kind of work, again, like keeps me on my toes. Like, it's exciting, it's new, I don't get bored like doing the same thing over and over again. It's very stimulating. So, and it pays really well. So
I've always kind of noticed like the sketch notes from afar. I mean, I do some version of that. I'm nothing like you guys. It takes me forever. And when the person is talking, I'm probably much better at remembering what I said instead of trying to do it fast, because it probably takes me forever to do it. And calligraphy is not, I would not recommend trying to do calligraphy and sketch notes.
Oh, yeah.
It takes forever.
Yeah, it takes too much time.
Yeah,
calligraphy is like if you have just one word that you want to highlight, 100%. And that's it. Yeah,
but yeah. I guess my memory does help me, so I'll remember what they said for the most part. But it's still like, I'm still amazed when I see, like when I saw your work for what you did for the speakers at Creative South, I was just like, that's just insane to me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, like just the act of taking notes on paper is way better than just listening.
100%.
Because you're engaging yourself, translating things, synthesizing, and, you know, taking those decisions just makes you engage more with the content. So, you know, even though I do sketch notes professionally and people are like, oh my gosh, that is so great. It's like, I told some people at Creative South, like, I do this professionally, but that doesn't mean that this is the standard that you have to do. Right. You know, if you're not doing this professionally, just do it whatever you want. The first sketch notes that I have memory of, I didn't even know about sketch notes as a thing. Mm-hmm. I was the kind of person that, because I cannot just stare at somebody for an hour, 2 hours, you know, in a class, I will start doodling. I will start like drawing people around me. I will, like, the teacher will say something funny, I will just draw it. It was just like my way to pay attention, to stay engaged. People think that the kids that are drawing are not engaged. And actually, because I knew that it was kind of like a stigma, I forced myself to pay more attention so that if I was asked, I could respond immediately. So I was listening, even though I was drawing something related to what I was listening. And that's how it started. Like, my first sketch notes were nothing like, they were pretty terrible, but I didn't care because it was fun. It was something that I did to help me, you know, cope with, you know, I'm not necessarily like ADHD, but I do have some sort of like, I cannot pay attention for too long. I get the jitters. I need to move. I need to step up or something like that. So that helps me channel my energy. So,
so what's like your top three sketch notes tips?
Top three sketch note tips. Well, we always said that sketch notes, it's all about listening. That is the main skill that you need to develop to do effective sketch notes. And it's not just like listening, like, you know, I'm listening. It's just like distilling the information. And how I like to say, like how I like to teach it is you're having a conversation with the speaker. Like when you're reading a book, you're asking yourself questions about like, is this what it is? Or like, what does this mean? Or how can I fit this into my personal journey? Like, I'm doing the same. I'm having a conversation with the speakers. I'm just like, what does this mean? Or sometimes I'm just like listening to something and it's like, you know, a full story. And I'm like, okay, where is this going? Where is this going? Where is this going? Oh, okay, I think this is going here. And when I answer that question, I write it down. So the first skill of sketch notes is just basically active listening, just focusing, paying attention. I think the second one, for somebody who maybe is just kind of starting or something like that, like, you know, they're just testing it out. They just want to see what is it about. I feel like the second one is to just make it fun, because, and this mean like draw probably more than you actually write. Because the tendency for people is to write everything down. And again, this is an active listening thing. If you develop that more, you won't write everything. You will write just the important things. But if you have this attitude of also like, hey, this should be fun. I want to draw. I'm doing this because I want to draw. Then just like draw more. I think it can help you pass through that boundary of I'm just note taking and adding drawings. So it's like, I'm doing those two things. And the drawing is the fun part. So I'm just going to try to do these things. And I guess the third one should be like an advice in general is just find what I call your hall of fame and learn from them. So I have a few people that I'm like, these guys are amazing. And I study what they do.
Gotcha.
And like, you know, the term like steal like an artist. It's not like I'm stealing their style, but I'm learning from the style. I try to do their style so that I can learn from it, because if their style is different from mine, then I'm going to learn something. Right. So, it's just that sort of like, okay, I don't have to be original at the beginning. I just have to learn from the people who are doing things that inspire me so that I can eventually end up doing things that are like that. So I'm a big believer of gathering your hall of fame, the people that you admire, and study really what they do and try to emulate it. I think that's, you know, that's how you learn.
That's cool. All right. So what would you say was the biggest fear you had to overcome?
There's been many. The road is,
I feel that,
is filled with potholes. Yes. But I feel initially the biggest fear that I had in my career was, as I said, I didn't want to be a starving artist. So I run away from art because I was afraid it was not going to work out. I was afraid that art was not a venue. And I think that all came from a standpoint of like, it was not the fault of art, because I knew that if I do art, I could do it well. Like it, inside myself, I believed that it was just something that I loved and that I would be good at. But I knew nothing about business. So of course, you know, if you don't know anything about business, at the end of the day, you're a business, you know, and I think that is the thing that I was more afraid of. Like I didn't know anything about business, and I was afraid that if I learn about business, then I would become a business person and not an artist. Like if that was a bad thing,
right?
You know? So I think that was my first fear. The second fear, I feel, it has always been this thing of feeling like I'm not doing enough. I have this fear that is deep ingrained in me. I feel like you know, this word potential, like the stuff that you could do. I have always felt that I could give more than I'm actually giving. And sometimes I feel like I'm not giving enough. And it's just so let me put you a very weird example. I was in singing classes for a long time, like for probably 5 or 6 years with a private teacher. I love singing. And when I came to the US, I developed a lot of allergies and my voice has been affected because of that. So I cannot hit the notes that I used to. And sometimes I hear somebody singing and I know deep inside my vocal cords have the capacity to reach that, but something is like covering them and not letting them sing those notes. And it's so frustrating. It's like, I know I could do it. Like I could feel how I, like the amount of pressure that I should need, how much should I open my mouth? Like, all these things, I know how it would work physically, but I can't. And that is like one of the biggest fears, you know, like with money. Like, you know, I've learned all these things about investing, about, you know, how to negotiate and all that. And I don't want to be the person that at 65 didn't do it knowing that he could have, you know? Right. So it's a weird kind of fear. And I live with it. Because it pushes me to keep going. Not, you know, I have to be careful not to just overdo myself and burn out, like go to an extreme, because I can be very intense at times. But I think it is a good fear, just like a, you know,
right.
Well, for those who didn't see me, I'm just like slapping my face a little bit, like wake up sort of thing, like keeping me on my toes. So yeah, I think those are basically my two fears. Yeah.
That's cool. All right, so let's jump into some fun questions. What's that thing you can't live without that's not your phone?
Two things?
Sure.
Three things.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah. The first one has to be my family. You know, my wife and my son, they are the most important thing in my life. And yeah, the hardest part about having a job that makes me travel a lot is just sometimes, you know, not seeing them for 3 days or something like that. It's like I miss them a lot because it's a lot of fun to be around them. So that's the one thing. The second thing, people are going to roll their eyes, but I definitely cannot live without a pencil and a paper. I can live completely like without a phone or without a computer or stuff like that. I've done it. I've spent times and actually most of my life, you know, before, because I was born in the 80s and, you know, there were no computers back then. Right. And I was always with a pen and paper. So I just like to make marks in things.
That makes sense. So,
Yeah. And then the third one is rice.
Rice. I love it.
Very close with water. Like those are two things that I cannot live without. Like, yeah.
I love that one. That's probably my favorite. That it's family and rice.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Use my pencils as chopsticks to eat it. I don't care. Yeah.
That makes sense, actually. Does make sense. I love that. That's cool. All right. So you already said one book, which one is one of my favorite books. I think if you really want to kind of think about money and just the whole idea of mindset, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is one of the best books for that. That book will completely change if you grew up in a family that never talked about anything like that or anything like that. It will completely change your perspective.
I love that book because it's a story, and there's a lot of books out there that are fantastic and they're like theory sprinkled with different stories, but this one is an overarching story that is very relatable, and you don't see that very often. Like I would love to write a book like that at some point, maybe not about finances, but, you know, but creativity or stuff like that, because it's just very relatable, definitely. It wouldn't come out as my like top 10 of recommended books just because I read it so long ago. I think I've read other books that have been like,
but I do think initially, if you've never embarked on anything new, I think for a mindset shift, it's a good book to start out with.
Yeah. Totally agree. So you were asking like
your book recommendations. Books. Sure.
Yeah. Atomic Habits, Mind Blowing. I still have it here. Very, very good book. I think it just changed completely my approach to discipline and like understanding that it's not like you have to be a disciplined person, but if you can change something about your environment, that discipline just comes. It's like
100%. That is so true.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I read a lot and I feel like, but I read a lot of like audiobooks. Mm-hmm. I cannot pinpoint one in particular, but I would say I've read like 4 books of Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah.
And I would recommend any book by Malcolm Gladwell to anybody who is just curious about how things connect in the fabric of society in life. It's just, I think probably, let's see, Tipping Point is really good.
Okay.
I enjoy that one. What other book? This is not, well, are we talking about self-development stuff?
It doesn't matter. Honestly, it's your choice, actually.
Okay, so I love storytelling, and there's a series of books that has been going on for like a few years, and it's a like murder mysteries. Mm-hmm. It's called The Thursday Murder Club. I forgot the name of the author, but they're hilarious. It's about a group of old people who live like in a, you know, in an old people's home thingy. Forgot the name of it, but they just tried to solve murder mysteries that the police haven't solved, but they're so witty and each of the characters is so distinct that it just makes you love them. It's also like funny and sad because they're old people. So there's stuff that happens that is really hard. And I just feel like it's very human and they're actually making a movie out of it. And I can't wait to see it, but I would definitely recommend the book, even better the audiobook, because it's hilarious to hear, you know, the voice actor, doing the different personalities and accents and all that. It's just so much fun.
Sweet.
And yeah, I think those are kind of like three that come. Sweet. My favorite book is The Wind in the Willows too. It's okay. Like a children's book. Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. I cried with that book. It's just the tenderness of the characters again. Mm. I'm drawn to stories that talk to your heart, yep. You know, that show you a level of humanity, even if it's through animals, mm-hmm. that just feels like this is how things should be. This is how we should treat each other. It's just like, yeah, tears me up. And I love it.
And since you kind of like books that kind of have a message, but they're telling a story, have you read a book called The Noticer?
No, I haven't. I'm going to write
it down. You should check that one out. I'm the same way. I love, even if it's like a self-help book, if it's a story and they have like good messaging in regards to a topic in the story, I love those type of books. Mm-hmm. So that kind of goes to what you were talking about. So it's called The Noticer, and all his books are like that. I can't remember the author, but you'll see it's kind of like a greenish and it says The Noticer on it.
Cool. I'll check it out.
All right. What's the first hour of your day like?
The first hour of my day? Mm-hmm. It changes. There are three things that remain fairly consistent. One of them is just that it's consistent. Every time it's just I prep stuff for my son, like prep him breakfast and stuff for him to go to school. If I wake up before him, sometimes I just get in my computer and start working, start like finding out the things that I need to do for the day. And start. Sometimes it's like writing, like I'm writing a lot of content for social media stuff, or just like going through my accounts and seeing how am I doing, you know, economically and where do I need to move money and stuff like that. Sweet. Sounds super boring, but at this point in my life, I feel like it just comes natural, you know. And then I either commute because sometimes I go to an office in Atlanta, the office of Sketch Effect, and work there. And when I commute, I listen to podcasts or listen to an audiobook. And if not, if I just drop off my son to school, I come back and I take a walk. And because when I work from home, I actually move less. I take less breaks. So something that I'm trying to work on. Mm-hmm. So I need some steps in the morning. Because otherwise, I know it's going to be like 3 p.m., 4 p.m., and I've walked like 2,000 steps, and that's not good. So I try to get some steps in the morning, and that's basically it. I don't typically eat breakfast. I used to love it. I love eating breakfast. I just now just wake up with this feeling of like, I have to get things done, and I want to get things done, and I don't get hungry until like 11. So that's the first hour. And I wake up usually between 6:30, 7 a.m. I love to wake up earlier, but I'm also terrible at going to bed early. And it's not good to sleep 3 hours. Like for me, I just don't function. So, yeah, that is kind of like one of those battles.
All right. I think I'm about to debut a question on the podcast, and you're going to be the first person.
All right, bring it on.
This hit me today, and I kind of want to start. What's one habit that you've developed that you would recommend for anyone to develop?
I'm always trying to learn. So every time that anything happens, I'm always asking, what did I learn from this? Okay. Every time I listen to something, it's like, what do I learn from this? And then I ask him, how can I apply this, you know, to my life? How does this apply to my life? I I'm a junkie for learning. I just love learning. But I don't love learning for the sake of learning, because I know I can become a snob, or people could become a snob if they're just have a lot of information. You know, for me, information without application is useless. So I'm always searching for how can I apply this? And I think that is kind of the first kind of domino of why I feel like I've gotten to the place that I am, because every time that I learn something, I try to apply it immediately. Mm. And so I guess that's kind of like stacking habits. The first one is the question of, you know, am I learning something? What am I learning from this? The second one is, okay, if I learn something, how can I apply it? And the third one is just applying it.
I love that.
Trying not to delay that application, because I've noticed, and my coach has told me, you need to even shorten the amount of time between your thinking and your action.
Facts.
Because when you stay in the thinking too long, you don't take action.
Yeah, we talk ourselves out of things.
You know? Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's the 3-for-1.
Yeah, I love that. That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good way to kick it off. All right, so what's next for Alejo?
What's next? So right now I'm in a sort of transition, because I was working full time with the Sketch Effect, and recently I just decided to jump off and work as a contractor with them and pursue my coaching even more, helping more people in that area. I think next for me is just accommodating to that. Mm-hmm. It's just weird right now, because my schedule is just all over the place. I know that I'm working less hours, which was one of the things that prompted me to make the jump, so that I could stay a little bit more time with my family. But I'm also traveling, so I'm trying to find a balance of how much I need to travel and how much I need to stay home, so that I can meet our financial goals, while at the same time being with my family. So for now, the question, or the approach for me, is just finding the balance between all that. And I think after that, what comes is just boosting a little bit more the part of me that is a teacher, that is a coach, because I've been kind of doing that from a platform, you know, on Instagram, in which the name finishes with art. So people assume that it's my art what's going to develop there. But I'm like, okay, I want to speak. You know, I would love to speak at Creative South, for example. It would be an honor for me, and it would be a fantastic experience. But I would love to just go to conferences, do workshops, reach more people, be able to help a lot of folks. I know there's a lot of big figures there, but one thing that my coach once told me is there's a lot of people who are doing things, but there's only one you. And some people will only resonate with you. So you got to speak up. You got to share your stuff, because there's some people who need it, you know? So I don't want to stay in a cabinet or under a box or something like that. You know, I want to speak out, and I want to show up in those opportunities. So eventually that might mean, you know, I have two ideas of books, or a skeleton of a book. I've been writing it for 2 years and hasn't, you know, been concluded, because it's still I'm not sure this is the timing. I'm not sure. It's so solid. So, I'm thinking about our ideas to, you know, put out some other content out there that can help more people or reach out more people. But yeah, it's that whole area of teacher, speaker, coach, that I'm pursuing in a 5-year kind of horizon. It's probably going to happen faster, knowing myself, because I reach out, you know, a lot, I think that's the next bigger thing. And apart from that, eventually it would be buying another business and just having this other stuff that has nothing to do with art, but that financially is a big platform to do other things, and help my family have more, you know, more freedom, more access, and more fun too. So,
dude, this has been amazing, man. This has been awesome. You've just been dropping so much information. Thanks. Where can people go to find you and learn more about you?
Yes. I'm on Instagram. Instagram, I say that it's my neighborhood. I just opened, actually in Creative South, I launched it, my new Instagram account, which is Alejo the Visual Coach. So A-L-E-J-O, the Visual Coach. And I say that because my coaching is visual. When I'm coaching people, I'm sharing my notes and people can see on the screen. Or if I'm like, you know, with the person, like I draw stuff so that helps them see where they're at. But anyway, like back to the question. Yeah, Alejo, the Visual Coach. I'm also an Alejo Porras Art. That's A-L-E-J-O-P-O-R-R-A-S-A-R-T. And my website is alejothevisualcoach.com. I'm on LinkedIn too, but I'm just focusing on Instagram at this point. I have a TikTok account, but I'm just focusing on Instagram at this point. So if you are on TikTok and LinkedIn and want to connect there, message me on Instagram first and then we can connect somewhere else. But otherwise, I'll invite you to my house, well, my Instagram house, I guess. I'll open the door so you can take a look and get comfortable and see if you like it. You know, if you like the food that I give.
I love that.
If you like the hors d'oeuvres.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Love what you're doing. Yeah. Keep killing it, man. Thanks, you definitely got to do a workshop at Creative Self. Got to do it. Figure out how to make that happen.
Yeah. We love it. I mean, I'm reaching out to Mike this week. I didn't want to bother him right after Creative South because I can't imagine how...
He usually goes on like a trip right after. I don't know if he did this year, but because the next week would have been Easter. So I don't think he did. So probably went on a trip. It probably would have been either last week or this week, one of these weeks. But I know usually he goes on a trip after Creative South because it's just like he's on grind. Yeah. For like 7 months
straight. Yeah. Oof. Yeah. Yeah. It's a big undertaking. It's very admirable because, and I mean, I know it's not easy because I've been behind the what's it called?
The scenes
at many events, you know, like just like looking, and I've helped organizing events, but like very small scale, not to that point.
It's not easy, man. Events.
Yeah, I can tell.
It's not easy.
Yeah. But you gotta give it to him, the heart that he puts in.
He
loves it.
Believes in all of us that come. Yeah. He just believes in the creative community. Love that dude.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, dude, so glad to have you come on, man. This has been awesome.